The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the BS Report. A sunny, polliny day here in Southern California. Not on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. In studio.
Yeah.
Our friend Adam Carolla. He's going to be at the Milwaukee Pabst Theater on the 29th, Friday.
Yep.
And then at the Casey Uptown Theater on the 30th, if you want to get tickets. AdamCarolla.com.
Kansas City. And, by the way, big show. Jimmy Kimmel coming out here at the Wiltern Theater on the 21st of May. Just down the street from where you live.
What do you mean, big show?
Well, the Wiltern is like 2,000-seater.
Why didn't I get invited to?
I'm inviting you right now.
Thanks.
You in. You want to come out?
It's May 21st.
May 21st, Saturday
night. 5 minutes from my house.
Yeah. And for me, it's great because I grew up here.
Yeah.
And I've never been inside that place.
Right.
So if you want to come out and do like a made-up movie, I'm
all
extending
right,
the invitation.
Well, speaking of made-up movies, we saw a movie that wasn't made up.
Yeah, we did.
But we probably could have made it up. This whole podcast is a giant spoiler alert. So here's the thing. We're going to dive into Fast Five really the same way. I don't even know what we'd compare this to. Like people would dive into The Wire in some sort of academia.
I was thinking more Trial at Nuremberg.
Oh, okay.
But the point is if you have... Look, if you're planning on seeing it high, then you should definitely listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
If you're really going to critically watch it and then break off into two discussion groups about it,
yeah,
maybe you don't want to listen to this podcast.
Or if you don't want it to be spoiled in any way, no hard feelings, just come back after you see it.
Can you really spoil it, though? Like,
that's my thing, is you can't spoil... this franchise.
I'm going to tell you that, for instance, Vin Diesel's going to be sleeveless most the movie. Is that... Are we sitting down? Did I ruin it for you? Did you just tear up your tickets?
That cars go fast.
There's going to be a lot of... That Vin will somehow get that 70 Dodge Charger, which evidently... He puts that in the overhead storage bin when he travels because that just goes everywhere. It doesn't matter what part of the globe he goes to, that 70s Charger his dad and him built somehow lands wherever he is.
Yep.
There's no bridge that is too far, no island too distant that he can't get that thing to.
So Carolla and I have been longtime supporters of the Fast and Furious franchise. What do we call it, the Fast Furious franchise? Because they've had Fast and the Furious and then Fast and Furious. The Fast Furious franchise, we'll call it.
The double Fs.
We knew this movie was lurking in here. We knew that they had a movie in them that would be everything we ever wanted from this series. And I feel like Fast Five was it.
I agree. And I remember when, you know, Tokyo Drift came out and people were starting to get off the bandwagon and they were shaking their heads.
Not us.
And I was just saying, just hold on. Like one of the greats, like your own lover, Larry Bird, having a tough third quarter. But you're just going, wait till it's crunch time.
Yeah, wait till he gets hot.
Wait, he's going to heat up. And that's what I told everyone. I remember being at the LA Auto Show, like circa, which I go to every year, circa, you know, 2003 or whenever the thing started, being downstairs in the sort of loser mall, like the ones where the guys sell the chamois and sell the carnauba wax. It's always real sad because there's a guy who has a headset on like we have with a speaker, and it's hooked up to two speakers, and he's standing there off the ground about 2 feet with his little kiosk, and he's talking about carnauba wax, except for there's one old guy who's standing directly in front of him, and the two speakers are blaring to his right and to his left. I always think, you don't need the headset and the speakers because there's only one dude, and he's standing right in front of you. It's down in that basement where I saw the original Cars to Fast and Furious before the movie came out. And I remember thinking, someone's doing a movie about this whole tuner market thing. And really, if you think about it, it goes back And this is what we should be doing too. I mean, you're already doing it. I'm not doing a good job of it. But here's what I'm saying. There's a couple folks out there like Kirk Cameron.
Yeah.
He comes up with a movie called like Firestarter or Fartlighter or whatever it is, and he spends like $450,000 on it, and it makes $50 million.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's going right for the born again Christians.
Oh.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
He's found his target audience.
Yeah.
Tyler Perry. He cranks out a crappy movie 3 times a year, but he has an audience.
The Christian African American
right.
community.
Nobody ever. There's all this huge tuner car, you know, a bunch of meatheads driving slammed Acuras, and no one has come out. They're coming out with these movies about Le Mans and stuff right. like that, but they're not coming out with the meathead slammer Acura movies. Somebody said, let's tap into the guys who think it's a good idea to put $20,000 into $1,500 worth of Civic.
Yeah.
Let's get these meatheads into the theater. And thus the franchise was born. And we got sucked up in their vortex and drawn in as well.
Well, I remember, well, it was July 2001. Mm-hmm. I had been hired for ESPN, hadn't started working for them yet. They gave me 5 weeks off. During the middle of this, Fast and the Furious comes out. I'm excited. Vin Diesel,
sure.
In the previews, seems like somebody I might like. Paul Walker seemed like he had a little Keanu Reeves in him, maybe.
Yeah.
I go to the theater. I see this movie. I drive home probably 150 miles an hour.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
There's something
Bill
about
Simmons, hard driving man.
Well, when you see these movies,
yeah.
you get in your car after, and the movie's not over when you're in the car. You're like,
I pulled out of the Arclight parking lot, like just backing out of my space, I chirped a gear. I was like, just the 8 feet backwards. Just I'm pumped up.
I drove home on Monday, and I was on Vine racing people at stoplights.
I know. You want look at the Hasidic Jew. He thinks he's all that in his Buick. Yeah, let's go, Padre. Yeah, and I remember first seeing Vin Diesel too, thinking, you know, I thought I loved Sylvester Stallone, but
yeah.
Now this is Sylvester Stallone if he'd been hit in the head with a snow shovel. Like, this is that much slower, that much better. He's thinking about every single word that's coming out of his mouth.
Yeah, hold that thought. Because it's really that he really realized that Manifest Destiny, I felt like, in Fast Five. It had been lurking in the other movies.
Yeah.
But this was the one where they were like, this guy is our generation Sly Stallone, and we have to make sure we put him in positions to realize that potential. But we're going to get to that.
First off, his arms should be insured by Lloyd's of London. You know how they would do like Raquel Welch's legs or someone like that? His arms should be insured. What if, God forbid, what if something happens to the guy? You know what I mean?
And his neck fat, I would also insure.
No, the middle neck roll should be... All right, the right arm and the middle neck roll should be insured by Lloyd's of London.
Done.
Yeah, imagine him and Sly like deconstructing a script, you know, where like Sly's like, all right, we get that you live your life a quarter mile at a time.
Yeah, I got that.
Now slow it down just a little bit.
Yeah. I think Sly would have looked at this script and said, Vin, it looks great. I like everything. But we need a scene when you're on the porch and Paul Walker inexplicably asks you if you knew your father.
Right.
And then really sell it.
Yeah.
Maybe take a long pause and stare out onto nothing and then start crying for no reason at all.
My dad used to have a barbecue after. Hold on, let me put a little more arm butter on. Let me butter up the guns. What were we talking about?
My dad used to barbecue for us
everybody
every when I was a
kid. Everybody in the neighborhood was welcome.
He used to make them ribs.
Right.
This is an actual scene in the movie. But... I thought Fast
turned out to be a sexual predator. Sad. Where's that arm butter?
I thought Fast and Furious 4 was very close to giving us everything we wanted from the movie. Like, here's the thing with the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the actors are in on the joke or not. It was a discussion we had right afterwards.
Yeah, hard to tell.
Because when we saw this screening of Fast 5, which is clearly the best of the series, the best well done, they know the brand now.
Right.
The audience was laughing in parts that I am not. Now, do you think the director intended us to laugh at these parts, or were we just laughing and now they have to pretend that it was intentional all along, but deep down they're like, ooh, I didn't know they'd laugh there.
It's really hard to tell. I think they have a brand. They go out and execute their brand. They're sort of, you know, it's like this. A Twinkie is not a good pastry. It's a Twinkie.
Yeah.
And when you're in the mood for a Twinkie, nothing will do but a Twinkie. But you can't put it up against a piece of German strudel. It is not that. It is a Twinkie, and that's what it is. That's Vin.
Yeah.
I'm going to choke you out with my guns.
Don't make fun of my barbecue.
The point is, this is its own thing.
Yeah.
It transcends the action genre. It just is its own thing. And I wouldn't have it any other way.
I wouldn't either.
I don't even know how you can review this movie. It's like reviewing a Twinkie. It's a Twinkie. If you're in the mood for one, it's going to hit the spot.
And that was the best thing about the screening we went to. We're in Los Angeles. We're at the Arclight, which I think is the best movie theater in America.
It is.
And the place is just crammed with people who totally get the movie. They're fired up for it. They're not going to judge it. They just want to be entertained. They want to see cars racing. They want to see Vin Diesel be a bad actor. Mm-hmm. They want to see if The Rock can be a worse actor than Vin Diesel, which was really the big question going into this.
Right.
They want Paul Walker to continue to be Keanu.
Right.
They want your favorite, Jordana Brewster, to see if she can out-act any of the cars, which is always dicey for her.
They must, and by the way, all women must, there should be a class action lawsuit against Hollywood filmmakers because they do the same thing every time when a chick gets pregnant.
Yeah.
If a chick announces early on, spoiler alert, that she's...
Well, we're going to spoil the whole movie. We don't need to do that again.
If a chick announces early on that she's pregnant, then there always has to be that scene at the end when they're on the exotic beach and now she's really showing.
Yeah.
It shows the passage of time.
Yes.
Now, obviously, they don't tell Joe... Jordana Brewster, listen, go mess your skin up, get all cankly, put on 60 pounds, and then we'll put a basketball underneath your unitard. They just do it the next day.
Yeah.
So you have supermodel Jordana Brewster's long and lean and tan or whatever, and now all of a sudden, her water's going to break in the next 3 days.
But she looks fantastic.
She looks exactly the same. Her face hasn't gained an ounce. And every woman who's ever been pregnant has to be sitting home going, I'm going to strangle this like, this is horrible because there's nothing they can do. They just put the lump underneath her. And then, you know, as soon as the lump comes out, she's right back to bikini.
Yeah, we want the De Niro Raging Bull gaining 60 pounds. We got to stop filming for 6 months so she can gain the weight.
She's got to put on 30 pounds of water weight. She's got to have her skin's got to break out.
And become much angrier.
Right. Super surly.
All right. So Fast Five starts. Vin gets sent to jail for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
So cut to Vin on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And this is really one of the staples for an action movie.
Mm-hmm.
The bus of prisoners with our hero who's been semi-wrongfully convicted, but not really, because you could argue Vin Diesel deserved to go to jail for the first four movies.
It's also one of these things, too, where they just make these movies and... basically, Vin Diesel's a thug who steals cars for a living. But because he's the center of the movie, you're rooting for him.
Right.
Like, if they made Hitler the movie, you'd be rooting for the guy halfway into the campaign going through Poland. All right, but at least till he got done with Poland. Like, because you'd see, his dad wasn't nice to him and his art school.
I know what you mean. You get caught up into whoever.
You just get caught up and you're going, you know what? Okay, you know what? Maybe he has an Achilles heel, but you know what? He seemed like a decent guy, and the way his stepdad treated him just wasn't fair. And you start buying into all this
stuff. It is true.
They take advantage. So this guy's really just a street thug who steals cars for a living.
Who steals cars and has caused probably $1 billion of damage to the community.
But he's your street thug who steals cars? So you start start buying into it.
So we're on the bus.
He's really, you know what he's like?
What?
He's like, it's like when you have a team and your team drafts a guy
with
a horrible history of felons abuse.
Or like Kevin Garnett right now, who every other team's fans hate because he's a jerk.
Right.
This Boston fans love him. He's our jerk. Hey, don't say anything about him.
Yeah, I'd say if he had but there's also the guys who should have the incredible criminal history of like domestic violence and all that kind of stuff. But now he's putting in some good numbers on your team. It's like you get his jersey.
Yeah.
We're shallow that way. So that's what Vin Diesel is for us.
Well, let's go back to this bus for a second.
All right. We know from the end of Fast and Furious that he's on the prison bus.
Right.
Right.
So this is an action movie staple. And I think 48 Hours, Mm-hmm. One or two did it. Anytime there's a bus and you're taking a prisoner from point A to point B, for some reason you're not on the I-10.
No.
You're not on the 101. There's no traffic. It's always a desolate desert highway.
And there's never,
with no other cars ever.
Nobody has any thought like, well, why don't you take a cruiser and send it out in front of the bus?
No. You know,
just to make sure.
There's only 25 prisoners on it.
Yeah. 25 of the most dangerous people on the planet. Yeah. And these guys, also, the bus driver's got to know something's up. Like, we're
the three cars coming behind him?
No, I'm just saying, like, when the captain says to the bus driver, I mean, the same way the cop should know when he announces he's got 3 days before he retires.
Yeah.
That something's up.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when the bus driver, you know, when the captain says, listen, we need you to take this desolate stretch of highway where there's no other humanity to be found to a prison on the, really, you should be flying to, but you're going to take a long, with no cop bikes and no cruisers and no escort and no helicopter of any kind, we'll just send you out in the middle of nowhere with this thing.
And the good news is, if the bus breaks down, you'll be outnumbered.
Right. And the other thing that these movies never quite address, but maybe it's just convenience, which is, they always pretend like the cops don't have a helicopter and or radios, which is to say, once you did spring Vin from the bus,
yeah,
where exactly are you except for out in the middle of nowhere in an NSX? I mean,
well, also,
someone's going to get on the blower, right, and go, hey, there's
the fugitive did this too. If you're, let's say you're convicted in Chicago,
mm-hmm,
and you're going to jail.
Yeah.
Where is the bus taking you? Don't you go to a jail in Chicago? You're not then going to jail in Indiana.
Well, when I got arrested in Los Angeles for way too many parking tickets and a couple of moving violations.
You deserved
it. And the guy pulled me off my motorcycle on my way to Hoffman Travel, where I was working at the time. He didn't put me in a bus and take me to Indiana. We just went to the North Hollywood place.
And it's going to be 15 minutes away.
And then if I stabbed a guy when I was in the holding tank over in North Hollywood, I probably just would have went to County, which is, you know, downtown.
Right.
Yeah, a couple minutes away, plenty of traffic on the freeways.
Always the desolate desert highway. So as soon as we see this bus on the highway, we're like, oh, boy.
Right.
And then the cars show up.
Yeah.
They spring Vin. So they cause
I always wonder, things seem to work out at the end and even at the end of Spring Him. But how does it work when they're drawing it up? Like, they're sitting around and they're going, all right, listen, Vin's going to be on the 5 o'clock prison bus to Lompoc. Now,
first of all, how do they know that?
I'm not sure, but they always seem to know that. And I guess it's the same way TMZ knows whenever I'm flying into Burbank.
Right, okay.
So they go, all right, now we need to spring him.
Yeah.
So here's how we're going to do it. Hot chick with no wheel experience.
Yeah.
We need you to hop in this hopped up NSX. We need you to fly past the bus.
Yeah.
Pull an e-brake. And then you and your 2,800-pound Japanese car that's 3 feet off the ground, we need you to charge the 200-ton piece of steel that's charging down the highway. You need to come at it.
Yeah.
All right? And then when
the bus driver will panic. Don't worry.
Don't worry. He'll never take on a waif model in an NSX. There's no way he's going to risk that.
He'd much rather swerve and do a bunch of spins.
He'd much rather roll the bus than just drive right over the hood of your car. Because literally, the NSX is the smallest aluminum-bodied V6. By the way, not even, sorry to go technical on your asses, but this isn't even a front-engine car. It is a mid-engine car. The car's behind Jordana Brewster. There's nothing between her and the front of that bus except for about 4 feet of crushable aluminum.
Yep.
She would just, that bus driver would think he ran over a speed bump, essentially, when he was rolling on. But instead, he's going to get all squirrely. Reminiscent, by the way, of Tango and Cash.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when Sly got out in the middle of the street and they had those two guys coming at him in the semi-truck and he was just firing, and at the end they just slammed the brakes on and went through, spoiler alert, went through the windshield? Why didn't they just run Sly over?
No, you can't.
Why are you slamming the brakes on? You got a semi-truck and a midget in front of you with a .38. Run him over. All right. The point is this. They then do the thing. Then the bus swerves.
Paul Walker cuts in front of the bus after it swerves. Bus goes over his car somehow and then rolls.
He uses the charger as the same way a gymnast who's getting a run at a pommel horse uses the springboard to hop up.
I was going to say an offensive lineman doing one of those roll blocks.
Yeah.
The defensive lineman doesn't see the guy until it's too late and he has to kind of hop over him.
I would say it was more like when the old days when they would try to block the extra point or the field goal and the guy would step on the back of the down linemen.
Okay.
Illegal now, but tries to go up and block it. It uses a spring. The point is it's really like saying, here's my plan, Bill. I'm going to throw this golf ball as hard as I can at that mirror.
Yeah.
And then it's going to land in that trash can behind me.
Yeah.
You'd be like, that's not a plan.
So the bus rolls probably 50 times.
Right.
And then it cuts to some newscast and they're like, this prisoner, Dominic Ferretto, there was a bus accident. And then the guy goes, there were no injuries. Everybody in the audience laughs.
Yeah.
That was our first.
Maybe they said fatalities. No, but the point is,
I think they said no injuries.
I thought it was fatalities.
All right, whatever.
But the point is, they wanted to let everyone know that nobody was killed or injured in that, that these guys would not put the life of innocent homicidal criminals in harm's way.
Point.
Right. And then everyone laughed because that was them trying to have their cake and eat it too.
So this somehow leads, they go to they go to Brazil and up in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Paul Walker has crossed the line.
Yeah.
He used to work for the feds.
The Hunter.
He's now sprung Vin Diesel, in my opinion, a little weird. I know he's in love with Jordana Brewster. I know Vin Diesel is his buddy. I'm not sure you want to become a fugitive just to spring Vin from jail.
And also,
a little bit of a leap of faith.
For a guy who's in love with a hot chick who lives in a bad neighborhood, who likes to do all her shopping at the Mexican market at night and then walk home with no streetlights on. I would argue that she should do her shopping like, you know, at Costco and Burbank during the day.
Ralph's might work.
And stay in at
Trader Joe's, maybe.
She lives alone. She can't find a date. She lives in an empty house on the wrong side of the track. Paul Walker does not do a whole lot of connecting in the 18 months in between the movies. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah,
He just, my feeling is,
no other cases.
I would come back, you know, after the first movie and see if I could break off a piece of Jordana Brewster. You know what I mean? Mm. I wouldn't just come back a year later like, hey, I'm back again. You know, business brings me back, official business.
And of course, law of hot women in movies, she's not dating anybody else. Because hot women never have boyfriends in action movies.
Cannot find a date.
Can't. It's tough.
In between the Paul Walker movies.
The cashier at the Mexican market asked her out once, but it didn't really go anywhere.
No. No, so she walks back, and again, I just got done watching Fast and Furious as well.
The fourth one.
Yes, right, which I turned into a basic cable classic on my network because I knew this was coming. I knew this day was coming. And that movie is as ridiculous as anything because there's that great scene where like he's in the garage with her and she's like, What are you doing here, Dom? This place is surrounded by federal agents. They're staking the house out. And he's like, don't worry about it. Oh, all right, moving on. I love that part. But
you know, I don't know if you remember this, but we broke down Fast 4 last year.
Mm-hmm.
And you did. I listened to it last night to make sure we didn't overlap.
Mm-hmm.
We did like 5 minutes on the Don't Worry About It and how that's the number one best action movie going from scene 26 to scene 27 you can come up with.
Right. Right. Oh, it is. It is.
But and moving on.
Back. Let's go on to five. But they break out now.
Yeah.
Everyone's on the wrong side of the law.
Yeah.
By the way, this movie not a great postcard for Brazil. If you're thinking like I thought Brazil, I thought a bunch of hot chicks when thongbacks and you know drinking rum by the pool.
Rio,
Turns out Brazil has a seedier side to it as well. Evidently, there's element over there.
Yeah, who knew?
Yeah.
There's an underbelly, if you will.
But a very innovative shot that I've never seen in a movie before, when introducing the country of Brazil, they did a long-form helicopter shot over the giant Jesus on the hill. That is something never in the annals of movie making has ever been done before. I mean, when introducing Brazil.
Do you think they could make a movie of just helicopter shots?
I would watch that.
Just people walking around.
I don't know. Like when they do Rio, they do the giant Jesus on the mountain, and it's sort of like the Hollywood sign one they do too.
Yeah.
When the girl comes off the bus.
I'm convinced that's why I think that's why Ben Affleck didn't get nominated for Best Director, because he became infatuated with the helicopter shot, and I think the Oscar people got mad after a while. Like, all right, we're gonna give you 4, but you just did 8.
You know what? The voting academy is fairly old, and old people get that vertigo when they get up on those helicopters.
All right, enough with the helicopter.
All right, so now they're going to Brazil.
They're in Brazil, and that's when we run into that guy.
Right.
The guy with the beard who, Paul Walker, he was in Vin's gang. Paul Walker, we don't know whether to trust this guy or not. And he knew Paul Walker was a cop. And
I would call him the poor man's Josh Brolin.
Maybe even the homeless man's Josh Brolin.
Yeah, like if you're making not even a low-budget film, maybe a porn film, and you wanted Josh Brolin for the part, but you couldn't get him, you get this guy. By the way, the gang is all back together.
Right.
And it's great for the guys, because no one has worked since the second one, or the third one. I'm trying to think which one. They broke him. Oh, really? The first one? We haven't seen this guy since the first one, right?
In the first half hour, somebody says something about, we could use another payday or something. The audience laughed because it was like one of those things they said in the movie, but it also applied to everybody who appeared in the movie.
Right, right.
We could use another payday.
There is that thing, too, in all these movies that you have to ask yourself where they go, when they get the band back together.
Yeah.
And they go, look, we're going to need to meet you in a filthy warehouse in Brazil.
Yeah.
And the point where everyone shows up on the same day, and then they show up holding a duffel bag, and they're like, all right, now what's this about? What are we doing over here? I feel like those were questions I would have asked on the phone. You know what I mean? Like,
before you flew to Brazil?
Like, if you called, even if you called.
Like, Adam, I need you to come to Brazil.
I need to come to a filthy warehouse in Brazil. I'd be like, hold on. First off, I got a million questions.
Yeah.
I got the kids. I got the wife.
Yeah.
I got a mortgage.
Is this a job? Are we doing a job?
Are we hanging out? How long are we going to be there?
Yeah.
Which duffel bag should I bring?
Right.
It's always just, all right, I'm here in Brazil. I was in St. Louis running a Waffle Hut, but now I'm in Brazil.
Why they do this,
what's
though?
Up? What are we doing?
They do this so everybody can have the awkward interactions, and then the hero could come in and do the,
all right,
I see you've all met.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I see you've all met. Okay. Now.
I see you all met, by the way. A line that is never said in anything other than an action movie.
Right. Never happened at a party.
Like, we went to a party 2 weeks ago. Nobody at any point walked over to anybody and said, I see you've all met.
Now that they all get there, but they don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And by the way, like I said,
You jumped ahead, though.
I know. I jumped ahead. But you could not get me from here to Van Nuys, which is 4 miles away, without a lengthy conversation about what I would be doing there, much less get on an airplane.
Yeah.
And well, get a passport
these people
out.
Have the availability. So homeless man's Josh Brolin.
Right.
Gets Vin and, oh no, gets Paul Walker and Jordana Brewster. He's like, I got a job.
Right.
We got to do this job. These 3 cars are on a train. We get the train. Mm. Leads to the big train scene. We don't know if Vin's going to show up. Vin shows up.
He's got a Brazilian wife, by the way.
Who does?
The homeless man's...
Oh, homeless man, Josh Brolin, yeah.
Yeah.
With a baby.
And ladies, I know you're not going to like me for this, but whenever you see these movies, these guys' wives, they're in the background, they're busy. They're not lying around watching Real Housewives of Brazil. They're washing dishes, they're taking care of the kid. You ever see them? They're buzzing around.
Yeah.
They ain't hanging out. Hey, what's up? My wife, your wife, hey, what are you guys talking about?
Yeah.
I'm hanging out. Oh, as a matter of fact, Vin... You're blocking the TV set. Out of the way.
Yeah.
No, they're busy working that Brillo.
That's the
bag.
Action movie way.
Yeah. That's man, I got to get me one of them.
Always action movie
rattling them pots and pans.
Well, when you move to the favelas, that'll be your second wife.
Yeah.
Sorry. So
they got a job.
Big job. Good job. Train. Anytime there's a train, you know the scene's going to be good. There's cars speeding next to the train.
Yeah.
Phenomenal scene.
DEA.
I would put it against one of the best scenes in the franchise.
DEA's got a bunch of hot cars in the back of the train. They're gonna pull up alongside it in a dune buggy and with a flatbed spot welded to the back of it, and then use a use a plasma cutter and take out the side. It's really, it's the most hairball scheme of all, because I saw, did you see that movie? Did you see that Denzel Washington movie about the runaway train?
Unstoppable.
Unstoppable?
Yes.
Listen, that movie was 95 minutes of them trying to hop into a train that was going 35 miles an hour. And nobody could do it. In this movie was 20 minutes of them driving a dune buggy next to a train where they unloaded cars onto the dune buggy one after the next. I mean, the producers of Unstoppable had to just be, never stop vomiting when they see Fast Five.
The Unstoppable had that one producer who was like the devil's advocate guy. Fast and Furious franchise, there's no devil's advocate producer.
Yeah.
Here's what we're going to do. Sounds good. All right.
Yeah. Pull up next from the dune buggy. Right.
So during this whole hijacking of the cars, the couple of the bad guys cross the line. They shoot a couple of DEA guys.
Yeah, and that's what happens. The bad guys have their own agenda.
Yeah.
The deal went bad. They hop into a crazy... all those cars are kit cars, by the way. I hate to ruin it for everyone. It's a GT40 kit. Obviously, so your audience knows, if that car were a real GT40, it would be worth, I don't know, $5 million, depending on its history. But if it's a kit car, it's worth $45,000. So that's what they use. And then they use some sort of Corvette that was like the Corvette Mako Shark, which was some sort of a prototype from the 60s. But again, just another kit. And I can't remember what the first car was a Pantera.
Movies are like porn for you.
Yeah, it's a De Tomasa on the side, but still.
This is car porn for you.
Pantera De Tomasa, 71. 351 Cleveland. Mid-engine. All right, sorry.
So they get the cars off. It goes bad. It leads to this scene where Paul Walker has to jump from the moving train into Vin's car and hold on at like 50 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Which he somehow does, but then they drive off a cliff and they're careening to their death, but it's fine because it's water and somehow they survived this. And the entire audience was laughing the entire time.
Well, I was waiting for parachutes to open or something. And by the way,
parachutes would have been a good move. I think if we were in the ideas meeting, I think we would have sold them on the parachutes. Maybe they have little harnesses.
Something
like that.
Let me float this idea to you, Billy Simmons.
All right.
More unrealistic in the water landing. Oh, I'm going to give you four.
Okay.
Four choices.
All right. It was about a 100-foot drop, I'd say.
It was
cars dropping.
It was about 250
250
foot.
Feet. Cars dropping.
A big drop.
Vin jumps out of the car. Walker's hanging onto the car.
Yeah.
And he jumps off too.
I mean, that was a massive drop. All right. More unrealistic. You ready?
Yeah.
Commando, when Schwarzenegger dove from the landing gear and remember he was on the plane and he broke the guy's neck and he crawled down and he went under. And as the landing gear was coming up, he just let go and he fell like 1,000 feet into a little swamp by LAX and he got off and dusted himself off.
Yeah.
I mean, at least he hit a marshy path.
Yeah.
It wasn't tarmac, but that's a pretty good drop there. Okay. Then there is the fugitive, the aforementioned fugitive. I mean, when Harrison Ford took that jump out of that sewage tunnel, you could just see the limp. I mean, that was 1,000 foot into basically cement dam.
Yeah.
They landed into. But he had the theme where he popped up on the shore like, ugh. Yeah, right. All right. Only phony part about that movie was that crazy jump.
It's bad. Okay. You could sell me on the train accident.
I got more.
Anybody walking out of that. But
I got more.
Okay.
The super horrific Indiana Jones crystal skull just...
And we don't count that.
Hold on. That was horrific. They were in that VW, thing, and them and the whole crew and the old man went down like the three waterfalls one bigger than the next. Like, eventually it was like they're just going over Niagara Falls going, ah! And then the same pop up by the shoreline. Yeah. The one guy was in his 80s. The professor was in his 80s. No worse for wear. My grandfather got killed climbing out of a bathtub. This guy goes over 250-foot falls. He's fine. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right. I'll toss one more out.
Yeah.
Let's see. Got the crystal skull.
You're missing a glaring.
Glaring one. Wait, I got that.
Are these just falls? Or are you talking about most improbable scenes in an action movie?
I'm just talking about falls into bodies of water.
Oh, okay.
Falls into bodies of water that guys would survive or wouldn't survive.
Got it. The only other one I would do, it wasn't into a body of water, but Rambo in First Blood.
Mm-hmm.
On the side of the mountain,
mm-hmm.
and they're shooting at him, and he mm-hmm. just does, he looks down, and he just jumps into the trees,
mm-hmm.
and he did get impaled by a branch, but
oh yeah, oh you know I could keep going because actually in Harley Davidson and the Marlboro
Man. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, they jumped off like a 50-story Vegas hotel into a 9-foot pool and had no problem.
I don't remember
with
that.
Oh, they were on the roof, and they were trapped on the roof. And Harley and the Marlboro Man both jumped off the roof.
No, those are his
and then Schwarzenegger took his horse through a glass, like, elevator and jumped into a swimming pool, too, in the movie with Tom and, you know.
All right, I have my answer.
All right, let's hear it.
The Fugitive, there's no way he survives.
Mm-hmm.
It's First of all, I don't even know if he can jump far enough where he doesn't hit the rocks as he's going
down.
Yeah,
it's like a dam down there.
Because it's not like he had a running jump. He just was like
jumped and hit. He hit the foamy.
He did a frog jump. Yeah.
Yeah.
If he had the running jump, you might sell me on it. But I just think it was too close to the shore. It's too far. It's a waterfall. You're going to get surged down. You're going to get sucked in.
Right.
He didn't have food for like 2 days. Like you're going to die.
Right.
On that. I would put Fast 5 second.
Okay. All right. So it wasn't as unrealistic as you've seen, but it was still pretty insane.
Well, I mean, Vin's driving, 80 miles an hour?
Right.
They go off the cliff. It's a 250-foot jump. Walker's holding on to the back of the car.
Yeah.
I feel like one of them would have landed on the car.
Yeah, that's
so maybe
true.
You put a third guy in that car, and that guy hits the car, and at least I know somebody died.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, they survive it.
Great stunt.
The bad guys get them. They somehow break out of that. Now it turns into one of your favorite scenarios, the one last job.
Right.
It's never the second to last job. Let's do our second to last job. No, it's the one last job. This is it. This is the last job.
Yeah. Also, there's that scene when they're, again, Tango and Cash ask where they're hanging from chains.
Yep.
And simultaneously brimming with confidence. My feeling is when I'm hanging from chains.
With five bad guys around me with guns.
Five scary guys with rusty machetes who are proven killers.
Yeah.
I may have a quiet confidence, but I'm not bursting with confidence at that point.
It's
they
true.
Seem to know something that the guys who have the machetes and the guns who aren't hanging by chains. No, and they do that same move every time. They grab them with their legs.
But the other guy somehow breaks his hands out.
He's been working on
something. He's been somehow
working on it. He had a bobby
pin. He can't move
his
fingers, but he somehow.
Right.
So they get out with the bad guys. They decide the drug dealer who's in charge of these bad guys, they're just going to rob this guy.
Right.
Because there was a chip in one of the three cars. And this chip somehow enables them to know every drug house that this guy owns, they can basically rob.
Vin is like, there's something about this car.
Right.
That's important. I don't know why the DEA agents didn't just pull out the Krako stereo and pull the chip out and put it in
a
briefcase and sit up at the dining car with it.
Yeah.
I don't know why they just left it in the car.
It would have made too much sense.
It was a pull-out stereo, for Christ's sake. Anyone could have stole the thing. But anyway, so Vin's like, there's something in this car that they want.
Well, his logic was that the car wasn't as nice as the other cars.
Yeah, the thing that
which bothered you because it was the wrong logic.
Well, listen, you can get the Pantera De Tomasa all day long on eBay for between 45 and 70 grand.
Yeah.
You get a GT40 in decent condition, albeit one that hasn't been driven through the desert at 200 miles an hour over cactus. But those are $4 or $5 million cars. But anyway, Vin did the thing where he was like, there's got to be some part of this car, and they want, and there's something important, so take it all apart, man. And, you know, they missed a joke, because somebody could have cracked wise and said, how about we check the VIN number on it? And it would have been a nice little inside joke for everybody. But
I would have enjoyed it.
They missed that. So they tear the car completely apart.
Find the chip.
Find the chip.
And now they decide one last job. So they bring in all the guys. They bring in the Ludacris.
Oh, they do that move back, where they pop it into the laptop. And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And they go, wait a minute. This
because it's very easy to get a laptop in the favelas. That was the other thing. It's like, first of all, how do you find the warehouse? How do you get this equipment? How do you have cell phones to call people? They have the feds looking. The feds are searching everywhere for these guys.
And not only that, but I've had this thing that I got in my iPhone,
yeah,
where I'm supposed to be able to look at my wife and kids when I'm out on the road.
Oh, yeah.
It's been 6 months now. I still haven't figured it out.
Yeah.
My wife keeps saying, yeah, you press the button. And then I'm like, I'm getting a thing that says I'm not on the Wi-Fi. How are they all, you know, Steve
perfect
Jobs
cell phone
all
condition.
The time?
Yeah,
they, every time they pop a chip in and they flap it. These guys are thugs from the barrio who steal cars, but they right. flap the thing up and they're like, oh, what do we got here? We got a series of safe house.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
let me see if I can crack the code.
Yeah.
And then they do it every time.
They somehow have a better wireless signal than me
always,
right now in
always,
my house.
Always, right.
So one last job. Everybody comes back. What's that guy's name? Tyrese Gibson?
Yeah.
He's back.
Everyone's
Ludacris
back.
Is back.
They don't get along. They're good natured, but there's some
good natured, a little bit of rivalry.
Yeah,
yeah. There's
sure.
some model we've never seen before. Who is that model?
Never seen before.
What is she from?
Oh, Bill.
What's she from?
Oh dear God, no, Bill. Bill, she's from what? She's from Fast and Furious. Not
she's
the Fast and Furious.
She, from the fourth one?
Yeah. She's the hot chick who's in with the drug lords.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the same girl.
Oh, Bill. Oh, dear God. Oh, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yes.
I don't think so. Joe Mead, can you look this up? Joe Mead's in a coma again.
I'm here.
Can you find out if the model from Fast 5 was also in Fast and Furious 4? I feel like she was different. So her hair was different?
She's the same chick.
Maybe you're right.
What's the character's name?
Never made that connection. I can't remember. There's three female leads, and it's not the one who's from Spain. It's some other model. Anyway.
Her name is Rosanna.
Well, whatever. So yeah, they have the whole band together.
You'll see her name. But, her name is Rosanna Anorexia. She's too skinny.
She's pretty skinny.
Yeah, no, she was in. She was hot for Vin.
I remember the character and the actress and the whole thing, but I didn't realize it was the same one.
She was hot for Vin when she was in.
Did she get skinnier?
On the one where Gilbert Godfrey was the drug lord.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then later on, that's why when Vin and her saw each other, she was like, I thought we'd meet under different circumstances. She said something like that, remember? She had a bad for Vin Diesel.
Well, who doesn't?
Yeah.
Who doesn't? If you're a tall model, 5'6" neck fat Vin is going to be the one you're going to target.
Guys with big rolls of neck fat. Sure.
So they,
right.
Before they decide to do one last job, they have a nice balcony scene with Vin and Paul Walker.
Yeah.
Which is great because the audience just immediately started laughing because they made ribs and now they're on the porch and Paul Walker knows he's going to have a kid and.
They
have like a nice pause. They cut to Paul Walker, and you know he's going to say something meaningful, and he does the, what do you remember about your father?
Right.
The audience just started laughing.
You know why? Because you can't have moments in these movies.
No.
You know what I mean?
Then again, you can. That's what makes the movie so great.
Yeah.
Is they try to have moments. Like, they're like, well, we need a moment. We're at the 40-minute mark. We haven't had a moment yet.
My dad. And by the way, I've memorized that whole monologue for my acting class. So
we spent a week in Italy together once, and not once did I ever say to you, "What do you remember about your dad?"
My dad used to have a barbecue after church every Sunday. Everyone in the neighborhood was welcome, except for the black. And and he gave food to everyone he loved. And then Paul Walker didn't know his dad. And he wasn't going to be that kind of dad.
Yeah. Paul Walker is the, I didn't know my dad, and I want to be the dad who knows his kid. That's the kind of dad I want to be.
Never works out, by the way, that way. But it's called a cycle, people.
Is it wrong that I enjoy Paul Walker and anytime he's in a movie, I enjoy it? I really feel like he's our generation's Keanu, or this generation's Keanu, I should say.
It's weird, too, because he never stop me if I'm wrong, but, he was in that movie where the other drug lords and the Deep Blue with the...
Yeah,
the
I like that movie.
Kid.
I know what movie you're talking about.
I like that movie, too. He always somehow gets hooked up with drug lords. Paul Walker... I never see the dude anywhere.
It's weird.
I don't see him on the talk show. It's not like, hey, Saturday Night Live, this week's host, Paul Walker.
Feels like he could host Saturday Night Live.
Well,
he's a real star.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. Something's going on with Paul Walker.
Oh, you think like it's almost like the quarterback who can only be in one system? And everybody in the team knows it's like he can only just drop back and sling it. He's like Jeff George, basically.
He's been compared to Jeff George many, many times. Here's the thing about publicists. Publicists recognize the strengths and the weaknesses of their talent.
Interesting.
And they won't put them in positions where they can exploit their weaknesses.
So like, for instance, you're a big fan, you have this podcast, number one comedy podcast on iTunes. It would make sense for the Fast and Furious producer to be like, or publicist to be like, Carolla loves this movie. This would be a great showcase for Paul. A little out of the loop.
Paul would never show up on my podcast because
they're hiding something.
Are there to protect Paul. And it's not really like they're hiding something, but I'll give you an example. They're guys that are marvelously talented, such as Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
Thus, Alec Baldwin hosts SNL 52 times.
Yep.
Why? Because he's funnier than anyone in the cast. I mean, just Charles Nelson Reilly, for Christ's sake. He's excellent. And then there are guys like Robert Downey Jr. Robert Downey Jr. shows up on, he used to do Loveline all the time. Like, he's got nothing to hide.
Very fun to hang out.
Paul Walker's never done Loveline.
Yeah.
And his publicist knows that if we put Paul Walker in this situation, you're going to go, oh, he's a dope.
Right.
Instead of worshiping at the altar of Paul Walker, which you and I do right now. So we don't want to expose him for the super boring, probably average intelligence dude that he is. Instead, he'll just be the hunky, good-looking movie star who's delivering a material from the balcony in Rio de Janeiro.
I feel like they do that a little bit with Brad Pitt.
Mm-hmm. No, because
Brad Pitt's got nothing to say, really.
Okay, here's the deal. I've yelled this at my wife a million times. Brad Pitt gets to hang around, look really smart. We don't realize that when you have that sort of chiseled face, they just look smarter.
Yeah.
It's built into our DNA. It's encoded into us. If you take kids, school kids, and you show them a headshot of Andy Richter, and you show them a headshot of Brad Smith, and you ask first graders who's smarter, they all pick Brad Pitt.
If he's dressed like Ocean's 11, Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Like he's planning some sort of heist.
It's just some guys. Look, and here's Brad Pitt. And then my wife will go like, oh, he's into architecture. He's a builder. He loves, it's like,
he likes houses.
He doesn't, I guarantee this guy doesn't know the difference between a high point saw and a cordless drill, number one. Number two, he has a ton of money. He hires architects. And he basically says, I want this room to feel airy. And then they come in and do some stuff. He doesn't write. I guarantee that if Brad Pitt was not Brad Pitt, like we didn't know who he was.
Yeah.
And he showed up for us to hang out and watch football. After about 3 weeks, we'd all get together and go, that blonde dude with the frosted tips, he's just a knob.
But
we should get out. We don't need that dude.
But then somebody else would say, but he had good pot.
He had good weed. Right. I know, but he's just sort of stupid and stoned. And remember, he wanted to put his team on, and it was during his team's bye week.
Yeah.
It was during New Orleans' bye week. I just think he's an idiot. Sal, tell him he can't come anymore.
He thought the Browns were still in the playoff race when they were 2-11.
Sal, send him an email, and don't be nice. Like, he's a stone dullard. And the thing is everyone knows it, and I'm sure his publicists know it, and I'm sure it's the same with Paul Walker. And by the way, to some degree, Bob De Niro's got the same thing, where they sort of keep him away from this stuff.
Well, now they've flipped that around with Bob De Niro, where it's like, all right, he doesn't have enough personality to carry a 2-minute conversation with Coffee, but play it up. Just go on talk shows and just deadpan it.
Right.
And they'll think you're deadpanning it, but really you just have no personality and nothing to say.
Right. So here's what it is. You could sit around, have everyone looked at your chiseled jawbone and your great masculine features, never say a word, and have everyone just think you were a super smart genius who was into architecture, who shied away from the camera so that you could help the folks who've been victimized by Katrina. Or you could come on the podcast and have everyone know you were dope.
Right.
So what's your choice?
Because Clooney seems like he's a really, really smart dude.
Right. And thus Clooney...
Goes on talk shows.
Well, it's like I said, it's like this. Let's just say you're a buff guy, but you're 6-degree black belt in Taekwondo, and you're a great kickboxer, and you have a great hand game and ground game, and you wrestled in college. Then you climb into the octagon. If somebody says, hey, you want to get into the octagon? You go, absolutely. But let's just say you're a buff guy, but all you do is eat creatine and do curls.
Yeah.
You don't have any game at all. And some guy goes, hey, man, you look tough. You should go into the octagon. And you're like, yeah, you know what? I could, but I don't really. If you get into the octagon, it's because you kick ass. And what I'm saying is Clooney.
Matt Damon. Affleck. He's good on talk shows.
All these guys, stars, they all go. Like I said, Robert Downey Jr., Alec Baldwin, give me a microphone. Give me a camera. Get out of the way. Brad Pitt looks like he'd be good in the octagon. De Niro looks like he'd be good in the octagon. Paul Walker looks like he'd be tough in the octagon. I don't think they have any game. Mm. Thus, their publicist says, don't go
in there.
It'd
be great if Paul Walker's people emailed you and said, oh, no, he has game. He just picks his spots. He's ready to come on next week. Let's see, Paul Walker.
Where are his spots, though?
I don't know.
Have you ever seen him?
I don't know anything about him. I don't think I've ever enjoyed more movies from somebody who I know nothing about.
And
same with Vin Diesel. Like, does he have a girlfriend? Is he married? I know nothing about him either. I just know when they come into my life with the Fast Furious franchise.
Yeah. They're like,
that's it.
You know what they're like? They're like the world's greatest taco truck. All of a sudden they just pull up in front of your house and you go, wow, this is awesome. I'm starving. And then they just haul off into the night air.
Well, I remember
like,
that.
You don't know where they're going or what works on or anything. And then a year later, they pop back up and you're like, I'm having soft tacos. And then they go away again. You don't know where they're going. You don't know how the food is prepped.
I remember last year when we did the Fast Four podcast, we talked about, how much we enjoyed it. And just we felt like they could make this movie every year. And a year later, they came back and did it better than ever. I think this could go to 12 or 13.
Yeah,
I really do.
Yeah, it has to.
This one, so it kind of went into this Ocean's 11 territory for about a half hour. In my opinion, it bogged down a little bit.
It got capery.
It got a little capery. It got a little, not enough cars. We had like basically a half hour without a car chase, which I was upset about.
They also did that thing where at one point they were on the run. The Rock was chasing them.
Oh, we forgot to mention The Rock. So The Rock comes in as the guy. He's like almost like a Green Beret FBI guy.
Yeah.
He's their number one guy. And his first scene, we talked about this a little bit afterwards. Oh, man, I didn't know you had left. I talked about it with the other two guys we went with.
Right.
I think it took about an hour for Rock to be in on the joke.
Yeah.
I think when he started doing the movie... Mm-hmm. He's like, this is a real movie and this will be good for me and my acting. And I'm just going to really sell this all out. And about an hour in, they said to him, hey, Rock, you realize, this isn't going to win an Oscar. Like, you can have a little more fun with this. And I sensed a switch go off within the second act. Do you see that or am I crazy?
Well, I saw him get off the C-130 transport plane with more cocoa butter spread on his arms than currently existed. Like, they must have had to send out for like a 55-gallon drum of cocoa butter.
You think they shot it at him like with almost like a water hose?
Maybe they used like a high pressure spray or something.
Yeah, I think that's how they did it.
Cocoa butter or something, because otherwise you couldn't apply that much cocoa butter to a man's arms.
Is it fair to say he looked a little HGH-y? Not accusing anybody. I'm just saying he looked almost superhuman. How ripped he was and how big his head looked and.
He looked
cartoonishly big.
He looked cartoonishly action figure-ishly big.
Yeah.
And then it was oiled up, like literally just greased up every scene he was in.
I have a theory about this, actually. Mm. I think he was so excited to go head-to-head against Vin Diesel, which they do in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he realized that Vin was 5'5".
Right.
So he was like more about, I got to look good. I'm going to have this action scene with Vin.
Right.
And then once they met, he was like, oh, I don't need to work out three times a day anymore.
It was basically like two chicks who were going to star in the same movie who both had D cups. And The Rock said, I got to get a push-up bra and put some cutlet things underneath my things. And really, because I don't want her rack to outshine my rack. And what I want to tell Rock is no one's going to outshine your rack, Rock.
Well, also, he's like 6'3".
At least.
There's never been an action hero who had the kind of size that he has.
Yeah.
They actually, he fights Vin down the road in this movie, and they really had to use like quick camera cuts and things like that because it would just, and we also thought Vin was standing on a crate for every one of their scenes.
When they squared off, it seemed like, it's hard to do. I mean, you see it in the NBA when the 6'2 point guard is standing next to the 6'8 power forward, you just see the huge height difference.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between the 5'9 or 5'8 or 5'9 Vin Diesel?
Oh, I'd say 5'7.
Or the 6'3, 6'4 Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, you're just going to see a huge, they're not going nose to nose.
They did a nice job though of, first of all, when The Rock shows up, it definitely did feel like a bigger movie.
Oh,
it was a
yeah.
very, very smart move to bring him in.
Right.
The franchise. And also good for him.
Yeah.
It made me like him more that he was involved in this. And so he's chasing them down. They're trying to do the job. They got to now break into a prison. And that becomes
sure.
the last hour of the movie. And then
not only is The Rock got, maybe 20, 30 pounds of I imagine he was basting his arms on almost a regular basis. Like, you know, on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, yeah.
When they got the squirter out, he's just rubbing. He must have had an assistant. I didn't stay long enough for the credits, but you know they do that thing where they go assistant to Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
There must have been assistant to Mr. Johnson's right arm.
Yeah.
Assistant to Mr. Johnson's left arm, and that was a guy who was just applying butter.
I wonder that maybe our cocoa butter sommelier.
Yeah, like somebody just wrangled cocoa butter, and also once in a while would pop the cork on something and go. Gone bad. Skunky. It's gone. Get new cocoa butter. More cocoa butter.
More.
So the
richer.
Not only that, he is wearing a shirt that is, I mean, like an Under Armour shirt that is made for a small corner in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like made Pac-Man Jones size corner.
Oh, I would go small. I would go like Daryl Green in the early 80s.
Yeah. Going back, a Daryl Green size. I mean, he's bursting out of this shirt.
Yeah, I don't know how he didn't actually burst out of it.
I thought at some point he was going to yawn and the whole shirt was just going to disintegrate in front of us. But now The Rock is out there.
And they have this whole subplot where he picks this translator / cop. It's the only one he trusts. Why do you trust her? Because she's a rookie. She hasn't been corrupted yet. But then it turns out her husband died in the line of duty.
Right.
Then she had some sort of weird connection with Vin Diesel because, as we've learned during the Fast and Furious franchise, once Vin puts his eye on you, it's hard to break out of that.
Well, when you're standing there looking at Vin, looking up at you as a woman. Yeah. And also, I want to do this thing, too, and I will suggest it for you as well, which is, I would like, much like P. Diddy and The Rock, I want different names for different endeavors.
Oh.
You see, when P. Diddy's producing and rapping, then he's P. Diddy. But when he's acting, he's Sean Combs.
Right.
And then when he's selling vodka, you know, he's K-Daddy or whatever.
Vinny Drinker.
He's got his own thing. I would like my own, like, acting name and then a podcast name.
Oh.
And you know what I'm saying? Why? You know, because Dwayne Johnson is Dwayne Johnson. He's The Rock when he gets into the wrestling ring. But when he's Dwayne Johnson when he's acting.
Well, on your podcast, you're the Ace Man.
Well, that's true.
Maybe when you're on stage, you could be Ace Rockola.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Dwayne went through really the same thing that John Cougar Mellencamp has gone through.
I like where you're going with this.
Because he started off with John Cougar, which is, made up name. And he started off with The Rock.
Yeah.
Then at a certain point, he became John Cougar Mellencamp, but he tacked Mellencamp.
So you're saying he was the white P. Diddy.
Cougar. Well, I'm saying The Rock was Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Yeah. Now he's just John Mellencamp, and now he's just Dwayne Johnson.
Soon he'll be just Dwayne.
There was the and I don't know if John Cougar Mellencamp could just be John Mellencamp. John. That's too confusing.
I don't even know what he is anymore. Is he John Cougar Mellencamp or is he John Mellencamp? I can't even remember.
I think if you asked him, he'd go with Mellencamp.
Yeah.
But it's got to be one of those weird things for John Cougar when people go, hey, man, you're talented. You're successful. You're established. Just use your real name. What's your real name? Mellencamp? Oh. Cougar's good.
Sure.
Cougar's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So, Rock, I would compare this a little bit to when you see in magazines. I remember this.
Johnson, Mellencamp, Cougar.
Remember when Friends came out?
Mm-hmm.
If a show's hitting, like I guess most recently you'd say like Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd see Ellen Pompeo in a magazine. It would be like, Ellen quotes Grey's Anatomy Pompeo.
Mm-hmm.
And then that shifts to Grey's Anatomy star Ellen Pompeo.
Right.
Then something happens where you just become Ellen Pompeo.
Right.
You become big enough. And I think that's what happened with Dwayne Johnson.
Right.
You were probably, for years and years, you were the man shows Adam Carolla.
Right.
And now you're...
the guy who talks crap about Vin Diesel on people's podcasts.
Adam Carolla. So they have one last job. And I would dare say that the last 25 minutes of the movie is the highlight of the whole franchise.
Yeah.
And everything else. But the safe, driving with the safe was just incredible visually.
I interviewed on my car cast one of the stunt drivers who drove for that scene. And he just explained how crazy it was to drive a car dragging a big steel thing behind you. And then also, it was funny because we were officially, the movie is not a short movie.
No,
it's 2 hours.
That's what it definitely lagged during the Ocean's 11 part. They could have chopped 10 minutes out of that.
It is a 2-hour movie, and we were a good hour and like 44 minutes in, and I'm like, no one's reached for the NOS. Where's the NOS?
Yeah, the NOS hadn't come out.
What the hell? I mean, this is an official record. As a matter of fact, somebody should check this out. Ask your producer, by the way, if he found out if the chick from the fourth movie...
Oh, yeah, Joe Mead, did you find out foreign...
The actress that played Giselle was in both the fourth and the fifth.
Oh, so you're right. I can't believe I didn't make that connection.
I can't believe I sat next to a guy who wasn't making that connection.
I've seen the fourth movie like 5 times.
You've lost your fastball.
Throwing out change-up stuff now. Throwing out speed stuff from now on.
Here's the next thing for Joe to research, although this is going to take a while. But here's my proclamation.
Yeah.
Trying to think about the
we have 10 minutes left.
All right. If you took the first 4 movies combined and took the period of time it took to get to the NOS...
Yeah.
Meaning see the sticker on the tank, see him flip the switch, whatever it was, and took all 4 movies, 4 minutes into the movie number 1, 17 minutes into the movie, and added up all those times, this would dwarf that. I was looking at I was visibly disturbed 90 minutes in. Where is the NOS?
So maybe they...
They may have lost their sponsorship or something.
No, I think what happened is they try to mix it up on you.
Okay, but
you were so used to the Nas coming out that they were like, Corolla's waiting for the Nas. Let's drag this along.
Yeah, so at a certain point, they reached down and flipped the switch for the Nas, and I breathed a sigh of relief at that point. I was like, oh, okay.
And I don't want to sound like a film dork, but I think it's really hard to direct a movie like this and have it move along and have those action scenes work. And they basically destroyed downtown Rio or wherever they filmed that with the safe. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen that much destruction in a final scene. It was like they basically obliterated the city. I don't know how they did that. I don't know if it was CGI or did they really obliterate the city, but I thought it was incredible.
I mean, obviously, they, you know, when you decide to pick the city to film in, pick the one that has the least laws.
Yeah.
You need the least permits, right, where there's the most palms to grease.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, that wouldn't have worked well in Malibu, California.
Probably right.
Or Santa Monica, California. Right. That would have been a disaster. So you pick some, you know, semi-third world country and you throw a few bucks their way and everyone's happy.
So, great ending, and we won't spoil the ending. That'll be the one part we won't spoil. Right. But I really love the ending, and then...
I will go back for 1 second and say this, and it always bothers me in these movies. As a guy who owns two warehouses and attempts to get rent on them, that part where you're one step ahead of the law, you're on the lam, and you're on everyone's most wanted list, and then at some point... You have a number of weeks in the middle of a well-lit warehouse in the middle of the city with all the food and, by the way, banks of computers and cars and equipment. Where's all the seed money coming from? Whose warehouse is this?
It's a great point.
At what point does some dude show up and go, hey, what's up? Why are these lights on? I pay for this place. What are you guys doing here?
I heard you were shooting. I heard somebody said there were gunshots in the warehouse.
You guys been doing donuts in an Acura inside my warehouse for 3 weeks, and I'm not seeing a penny? What's up? I feel like there'd be some landlord who'd want to know what's going on.
And then we had it ended with the pregnant Jordana Brewster and Vin now dating the Rock's cop lady.
I'm trying to
because they had that connection. They
didn't. I'm trying to think of where that chick came from. Was she married to Tony Parker at some point, or am I confused?
No, she did look familiar. I don't know who that was. It wasn't Eva Longoria. It was like cuter, younger Eva Longoria.
Yeah.
She ends up with Vin. They go to visit.
Think Gloria Estefan before the bus accident.
And just think, just when we thought we couldn't have enjoyed this movie anymore, they go Rocky III ending on us.
Yeah.
Vin and Paul Walker decide, let's race one more time. I got to know.
Right.
Now, they didn't do the thing. They would have been a good excuse to have your last Nas shot. They could have thrown you one more Nas before they went to directed by Justin Lin.
Also, let me explain something. Racing somebody in a drag race.
Yeah.
I'm not blowing sunshine up you, Bill Simmons.
Yeah.
You could hop in your BMW.
Yeah.
With your turbocharged straight six that produces 300 horsepower and sit next to Connie Coletti. Or Shirley Muldowney, John Force. You could take John Force, like the winningest funny car driver in NHR history, and you could sit there in your BMW and put him next to, and John Force could get into a car that had 15 less horsepower.
Yeah,
like maybe just the non-turbocharged BMW, and you guys could sit in a quarter mile, and you would dust him 10 out of 10 times. Well, the way you do it, stomp on the accelerator. You've got another 20 horsepower.
Especially if I had the Nas.
If you had the Nas, not a damn thing you could do about it. So that whole thing where, like, I'm going to beat you in a drag race.
You need two identical cars, basically.
Yeah, and even then, it's just you stomp down your right foot. There's nothing else you can do about it. You know, get them out on a road course.
Don't ruin it for guys.
I'm just saying, go to Laguna Seca, turn some laps. That's one thing. But just going in a straight line, really, your wife would smoke you if her car had another 5 horsepower.
I guess the only way that if you had a go-kart and it was Leanne Tweeden and you outweighed her by 50
don't
pounds.
Don't pull the scab off
I'm
of that
just
woman.
Saying. She's still walking around town crowing how she beat you.
Still crowing. Well, I'll
cheap,
say this.
Cheap victory.
The point is Leanne Tweeden, where is she now? I don't know. Where am I? I'm talking about Fast Five with Bill Simmons in his den.
You're the big winner.
Yeah. So who won that battle?
You're the big winner. Well, you left because you had to take a podcast. You missed. They threw a little deleted scene at the end.
Uh-oh.
And it was Eva Mendes going to see The Rock. Mm-hmm. Eva Mendes, who hadn't been in the movie the whole time. I don't know where she was. I think she was in rehab.
Yeah.
And she's like, you're going to want to see this, which is great.
Right.
You're going to want to see this. Everything is going to be good after that in an action movie. Mm. Show cars going over the line in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
We got a little facial recognition on one of them.
Yeah.
It's Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Vin's allegedly dead girlfriend from Fast Four.
Back. She's back.
Could be back. So they basically admitted now that they are going to be releasing these every year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be making a ton of money. The audience was completely satisfied when they left.
Yeah.
I would dare say that I don't think I have five things in my life as reliable as the Fast and Furious franchise at this point.
No.
Go to the theater. It's going to deliver. I know what I'm getting.
Yeah.
I'm going to laugh a couple times, not for the reasons they might have thought I would have laughed.
Right.
I'm going to see some cars race. I'm going to get to see Vin Diesel do things.
Jimmy Kimmel's going to make fun of us.
Jimmy Kimmel's going to mock both of us.
Mock all you want, Kimmel.
And we're going to watch
this. Living our lives a quarter mile at a time. Desk jockey. Sitting there, watching your life waste away, sitting behind a computer, writing jokes while we're out living our lives, watching other people live their lives. Am I right?
Suck it, Kimmel.
Yeah. Who's the joke on?
It was great. So my final rating, I got to say, for what this movie wanted to be and what it delivered, 10 out of 10. I'm not saying it's going to win the Oscar.
Right. Well, you're not getting Noam Chomsky to come to see this movie, right?
Right.
So everyone who goes to see this movie will be satisfied by this movie.
Yeah.
If you're going to get a major league intellectual to come see this movie, he's going to be devastated by this movie. But for who it's made for, it's right up there.
Here's my last question, then we got to go. So now we've had five movies. I think these two have been in four of them, but only three together.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how that worked?
These two?
Walker and Diesel.
Uh-huh. Well, Diesel showed up at the end of a Tokyo Drift.
Right, right, right.
Because my theory behind that is Diesel said at a certain point, I'm a real actor. He didn't do Triple X. He didn't do the second Triple X.
Yeah, he thought he could spin off into his own franchise.
He said, I'm doing my own thing.
Big mistake.
I'm doing my own thing. I'm a serious actor. He did
settle
that,
down.
He did a movie where he put a rug on and was in and played an attorney or something. Yeah. He wanted to spread his comic wings. So he said, I'm doing my own thing. They realized after doing the screenings and the testing of Tokyo Drift that nobody liked Tokyo Drift. So they said, let's give Diesel $3 million just to show up at the end so we can put him in the trailer.
Yeah.
So people feel like, oh, we got our little huggy
chicanery.
Yeah. So he can show, he was in Tokyo Drift all of 40 seconds.
Yeah.
But he was in the trailer. So we feel like we got our huggy bookie back, our bald, smart big man. Arm, slow talking, neck rolled huggy bookie.
I think they thought Paul Walker could carry the franchise and they were wrong. You need both of them. They're basically Shaq and Kobe.
That's right.
You don't want to spin them off in their own teams. You might be able to win a title, but you're going to have to get a lot more pieces.
Right.
Just keep Shaq and Kobe together. You're better off.
That's right.
So, wait, how did we leave?
The question is, Paul Walker and Vin Diesel accept their fate?
No, I think they have. I think they did with this movie. My question is, so now Fast and Furious 6,
mm-hmm.
at the end of 4 and at the end of 5, they did their quote-unquote last job. They should have made enough money to never do another job.
Right.
What happens when we go from one sequel to another where all of a sudden, what happens to that money from the last job? Where does it go? Is it poorly invested? Are we not supposed to ask?
The next one is not going to be about money.
Oh.
The next one is going to be about getting Nettie or whatever
Michelle Rodriguez's
name is out from under the German drug cartel who's enslaved her.
Oh, I like that.
That's going to be a
thinking.
Break her out kind of thing. That's
she,
not... It ain't going to be about money.
And then it'll have the scene with Vin and her
mm-hmm.
on a balcony.
Yeah. Tell me about your mom.
You could have let me know you were all right.
I didn't know my mom. I couldn't. I knew what you would do, and I knew what they would do to you.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't risk.
No, because, she'll give that speech where she knew that if she told Vin she was okay, that he would come after her, and that would get him killed.
They would have brought you right to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it.
I had to know you're all right. living in the favelas.
Yeah.
In a weird, like, abandoned warehouse.
He's and he would be like, I live my life a quarter mile at a time. Do you know how long it would have taken me to get to Germany?
12 years.
Mile at a time.
Well, I'm very excited.
Yeah, me too.
And hopefully it will be a year. And then next year at this time, we will be doing Fast 6.
I'm just going to go to the theater and just kind of hang out.
You'll see it again in the theater, I bet.
Oh, yeah.
I might be with you.
Oh, God willing.
All right, so Adam Carolla, Milwaukee Pabst Theater, the 29th Friday, and then the Kansas City Uptown Theater, the 30th. Get tickets at Adam Carolla.
And the big Wiltern show.
And the Wiltern, May 21st.
With Bill Simmons making a special appearance.
And that desk jockey, Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks, it was a
buddy.
Pleasure.
Good
day.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.